The interviews and discussions in this podcast are opinions only and not financial or investment advice. Listeners should obtain independent advice based on their own circumstances before making any financial decisions. Hi, this is Barry Fitzgerald, Garen Perro columnist for StockEd. Welcome to the Explorers Podcast. Today we're off to Brazil, a sort of spiritual home for Garen Perro, given the Garen Perro name actually comes from the Portuguese word in the country for an independent prospector or miner. And it has to be said that Garen Perro has a liking for any junior resources company that has big in its name. We've got that today with Big River Gold, the longtime Brazilian specialist which now trades on the stock exchange under the code BRV, or Bravo Romeo Victor, to be sure. I say now, as the company was originally Crusader Resources, which listed in 2004 as a WA explorer before heading off to Brazil, where it got involved in iron ore for a time before securing the Borborema Gold Project in the northeast of the country. The 2.43 million ounce Borborema Gold Project is what the company is all about now, with its new name, a share consolidation, a new look board and management team, and a capital raising back in December, all combining to give real momentum to the push to get Borborema into production. Big River is trading at 37 cents for an undiluted market cap of 81 million. That's interesting when compared with the market caps of, say, WA gold producers with a similar 80,000 ounce a year production profile at an all-in sustaining cost of around US$700 an ounce, like Borborema has. We've got Big River's Executive Chairman, Andrew Richards, with us today to give us a rundown on the company and its plans to get the project into production and reverse the apparent discount in the market's valuation of the company compared with its Aussie gold peers. So with that, I'm going to say, hi, Andrew. Welcome to the podcast and thanks for your time today.
Good morning, Barry, and thank you for inviting me.
All right. Andrew, I don't think we need to go back over the company's long history in Brazil, but it would be great if you could give us a snapshot of your professional background as well as that of Borborema up until this point in time.
Of course. Well, obviously, my background is technical. I was trained as a geologist and spent a fair bit of time in exploration. And then after a short spell in teaching, I came out into mining. Came back to Western Australia, chief geologist at New Celebration and also Telfer Gold Mine, through the big drill outs there. Yeah. And then spent some time, several years, in fact, in the banking environment, looking at project finance, which was a great learning curve for me before deciding that, gee, I can do this too, and went out on my own and did a few other things and found it was not as easy as I had thought looking at inside. So I spent a lot of time working around the world, a lot of time in China, Africa, Asia, and certainly South America. And most recently, I was asked to help out with Borborema a couple of years ago. Not so much Borborema, but as it was then, Crusader Resources, to help out at that stage after they'd gone to the AIM in London. Mm-hmm. We came on board and had a look at a lot of the assets that they had and decided, well, I had a look at this project in Borborema and I just couldn't believe it hadn't been started earlier on. It does have its own issues, and I'll certainly come to those in a second, but it was a great asset. A very large asset, in many ways a low-risk asset, but obviously there were a few issues that had to be done. So we got rid of our non-core assets and focused on this. We finished a DFS on the project in late 2019, updated that last year. In fact, are updating again now, which I can come to shortly. But it's a great asset in many ways, and the guys who did some work on it did some excellent work on it. It did suffer at the time from a lack of water, which is a bit strange given that we're in, we called ourselves Big River, which was actually the name named after the state that we're in Brazil, which is in Portuguese, Rio Grande do Norte. So the irony is not lost on me. There's not much in the way of big rivers there. It's quite an arid environment.
Before moving into the DFS, the updated DFS, and some of the key figures there, I guess we better cover off on COVID. How's the company dealing with that? And is there any project delays or other issues?
Well, look, yes, it has caused project delays, perhaps indirectly rather than directly. There has been a reticence by financiers and other groups, certainly over the last year when we were actually actively looking at finance. There was a lot of interest, but less interest in going to Brazil when there were so many other great projects being in development around the world, including Western Australia and Canada and others. I think that's changed somewhat. But directly, I think the only thing that's really affected us has been exploration in the wider area. We're at that stage of the project where a lot of our work is can be done remotely, detailed engineering online, out of engineering offices rather than on site. But having said that, we do get to site when we need to. It's just that we're not in the physical stage of construction right now, so that's reduced the need for us to be there.
Right.
But occasionally we have site visits. We are very close to an international airport. You can get flights into Natal from Lisbon or Miami, and then simply a two-hour drive to site. So we have had that on occasion when people look at our project recently.
Right, okay. You mentioned DFSs and updated DFS. Run through some of the key figures for us. The one that jumped out at me was potential EBITDA at the conservative gold price of around US$72 million.
Yes, look, I think it's we did a DFS and pulled a whole lot of information together late 2019, December, in fact. And as always, you can always keep finding these over and over again, and that's possibly part of the issues. But we looked at it again in the middle of the year, and it certainly worked out very well. What we looked at doing was a stage approach to the project. I mean, it's a big project, but as I mentioned earlier on, the big issue facing this project is the lack of water in the region to support the process. So what was redesigned to start the project up was a smaller operation with a view to go to expansion at some stage when we've got sufficient water. But we actually we addressed the water issue by recycling water out of the tailings. So we dry stack the tailings, and therefore there's no need for a tailings dam, which in the current climate in Brazil is very positive for us. We also looked at enhancing the dams, but also importantly, we secured the rights to the liquid sewage from a nearby city about 30 kilometres away, which we intend to pipe down the main highway, treat and purify on site, and then use that in the process. And that really was the only limiting thing on getting this into production. Even when it was first done, the first feasibility study in 2014, at the time, of course, the gold price was very low, but the issue was water. Now, we've addressed the water. I've got to say, in every other way, we have all our licenses, and we're fully ready to go. We have environmental, our construction, our mining license. So the DFS, getting back to your question, Barry, sorry about that, distracting that, the 2 million tonne per annum operation that we put forward in the feasibility study threw off a lot of cash, even at the relatively low gold price we used of $1,550 an ounce. So the IRR pre-tax is about 65%. The payback's just over a year, and of course, if you increase the price you get for the gold, then obviously that improves a lot. So we should expect to get the average EBITDA per year is about $72 to $80 million dollars a year, I would imagine, going forward. And as you're right, the cash cost is very good. We're one of the lowest cost producers in the country, or will be, at 713 all in sustaining cost. And the first few years of that, of course, when we actually produce a higher rate of gold, it's even less, but below 700.
Now, you mentioned the 2 million tonne per annum scenario, processing, the mining processing rate. But as we both keep saying, it's a big resource, 2.43. Is 2 million tonnes per annum going to be stage one and maybe crank up to 4 million tonnes per annum over time? Or what's the plan?
We don't know exactly what we're going to crank it up to, but certainly we're working on the number of 4 million because that's what we are permitted to. I'm increasingly of the view that we will do that sooner than later. And the comfort for that is that we're getting some really positive feedback and news. I mean, right now our people in Brazil are actively looking for additional sources of water, and we think without putting too much out there, I think we're on the track to securing that. As soon as that happens, I think we can start looking at the full feasibility and increasing it to 4 million tonnes per annum. But that will require a few other things, like moving the road and moving the power line and getting more permissions. But you know, we're on track for that. So our stage one is currently looking at doing 2 million tonnes per annum over 10 years, which only mines less than half the resource reserve. No. I imagine if we can start looking at getting an expansion on that, we will start earlier. So I don't know. I think it will change a fair bit. But without forecasting too much right now, that's kind of what we're doing at the moment. I might add, you mentioned in your preview that we raised 15 million US or 20 million Aussie at the end of last year. That did two things for us. We were looking at, firstly, continuing on with detailed engineering to do the FEED process, the EPCM and the construction. But it also gave us the opportunity, I guess, to introduce some really good shareholders onto the register, which have I think, a lot of experience in gold, both in the production, the investment, and what have you, really recognized, mostly North American and European groups. And I think what we have now is a very well-aligned share register with the task we have ahead of us in developing this project. So I think prior to that, last year when we were going for financing, I think the elephant in the room was, how can this small Australian company develop this very large project in Brazil? Can they, you know, meet all the requirements? But I think what's happened now with the change in our shareholder register, I think we're being perceived in a much different view this year. But as part of that, I guess what is now our major shareholder, Dundee Goodman, is 19%. I mean, one of the questions they asked us was one of the questions we've been asking ourselves. Have we designed the 2 million ton per annum plant with the most efficient use of capital so that if we do go to an expansion, it's not going to impede production, or we're not going to reinvent the wheel, we're not going to spend all waste money. So the question was posed, and we quite agree with that. Can we do an option study to see that we get the most efficient use of capital? Mm. And that was finished, I think, about a month ago. And indeed, it came out with some really, really interesting things that we've actually caused ourselves to redesign certain aspects of the equipment, over-design certain things like crushers, gold room thickeners. And so that what we've got now is a 2 million tonne per annum plant that can be efficiently, readily, and quickly upgraded to whatever expansion number we use. And we're working off a working number of 4 million tonnes per annum, which I think is a very reasonable number to target, with a minimum of fuss and a minimum of additional cost. Now, obviously, on top of that, while we're doing that, we're also freshening up our vendor costs because, obviously, with the DFS that was done in 2019, some of those are looking a bit stale, so we're freshening those up. And we should be going back to see several financiers who have been discussing things with us, I think, by the middle of this year.
I had a look at some of those optimizations, the bigger SAG mill, the right-sizing, the CIL tanks. The only area, power, what's the story with power in that part of the world?
Well, we get very cheap power there. We were tapping into the regional grid line. We've been provided with a substation in the nearest town of Cures Novos, and we will just do a power line from their spur line down to the site to another substation that we'll install on our site. So it's all very efficient. We only get about 8 cents a kilowatt, which is very cheap for power in that region.
Is it hydropower?
Yes.
All right, so you'll be producing green gold with the help of sewage, water, and hydropower.
Well, our ESG characteristics are pretty good. We clean up the sewage, and we clean up, put a lot of employment. We actually sort of use the local power, provided facilities to a fairly impoverished area. There's very high unemployment there. But having said that, it's in many ways very sophisticated in terms of mining. There's a lot of services and things you can do. Mm-hmm. And our infrastructure is great. And where we are, we know it. If you think of Brazil, people think of garimpeiros, they think of jungle, rainfall, they think of the Amazon. Well, don't think of any of that because it's not there. We don't have jungles or illegal miners or indigenous issues or reserves. It's a very flat terrain. Infrastructure is great. On a main highway, 2 hours from the main capital, it's pretty good.
And I guess we should mention that a lot of the pre-strip's done because Borborema was a producer back when, roughly?
Oh, look, a few decades ahead ago now, but I've got to say there's not a huge pit there. That they made efforts there to do a leach operation for the shallow oxide that's there, but there isn't a lot of oxide. It's pretty much fresh to the surface, and then it goes a small transition zone. We'll have to do a bit of pre-strip, about a 4-to-1 in stage one. And then, of course, the way there's pit design, the stages at the moment, we will go up to within 50 metres of the road for the open pit. It's a thick ore zone, outcropping at surface, and it goes down very deep. It hasn't been drilled out at all.
Assuming financing is, say, wrapped up this quarter or early next quarter, when could you be in production?
If we get our financing away, I would suggest, well, with all the documentation and legals and due diligence by the third quarter of this year, then we could be on the ground, I think. We'll finish our EPC and our detailed engineering, as you always do, but we should be on the ground sometime second quarter next year, and it's about 12 months construction, 15 months construction after that, so sometime in 2023.
Right. hopefully the country has well and truly emerged from COVID by then. But I guess one advantage over there would be cost vis-a-vis, say, the WA gold scene, as well as accessing the skill labour.
Yeah, look, very much so. As I said a moment before, it's a very sophisticated mining culture over there. There's a lot of things you can get in terms of labour, contractors, trucks, assaying. Most of the steelworks and fabrication can be done there as well. So, yes, and, of course, the currency has moved significantly in our favour. I think when we did our first DFS in 2019, December 2019, it was 4 real to the US dollar. It's now 5, which makes a significant impact on all of our costs, because about 70% of our costs will be in local currency. So it certainly has helped us.
Okay. Now, interestingly, while you're focusing on getting into production, I see that a recommitment to exploration. I think it's the first since 2014.
Yeah, look, it's, I've got to say, when this was put on the back burner at that time, I think the focus on the area sort of dropped off, shall I say. There were a lot of other things to look at in Brazil, and there still are. I mean, we get going, there's a lot of things we can look at, but right now we're focused on this. But, yeah, look, I think I don't really want to go into the wider region of exploration at this stage, but given the coronavirus restrictions. But we can put a rig on site, and we will. In fact, we've got a rig there at the moment doing some geotechnical work for the dams, but it's better managed and better controlled. So we'll put a rig on site, a couple of rigs on site, and we will draw around the area that we have a pit design on for several reasons. One, I guess, proof of concept. We want to demonstrate that this ore zone is continuing at depth, between 35 and 50 metres thick. Knocking a lot of holes in there because, of course, that's going to be some years before we access it, but it's a proof of concept. But of more immediate accuracy is we have some very high-grade plunging chutes that haven't been tested outside the current pit design. Won't take much to test those. And we have about 500,000 ounces of resource in inferred category, which means if we can convert that to indicated and therefore into reserve, we're a better chance for even better economics for the pit. At the moment, our reserve is about 1.6 million ounces. If we can convert all or part of that inferred resource, that will take us to a much greater size and, again, validate the need to expand the plant because, as you say, 2 million tonnes per annum plant is perhaps not the optimal size for this size deposit.
Okay. Now, there has been a reference, I don't know whether it's a big deal in the overall scheme, but it's not a subject I know much about, mica, produce a mica concentrate for the paints and plastics industry. What's the story there?
Yeah, look, that comes out of my banking background, I guess. I guess being there before, I was always traditionally into a base metals and gold environment, but working in the bank for a while, I saw a lot of really good industrial mineral projects that they're not very sexy. They don't get the headlines, but they when you get a good one, they actually can produce some really good returns for the producers. We had a look at mica. There's a lot of mica in this ore. There's about 30% of the ore that goes into the mill is mica, and you've got to treat it because it does carry gold, and the recovery from mica is very good. Still 92% recovery, but at the end of it, after you've treated it, processed it, and dewatered it, so it's reasonably dry when it comes out, you have a lot of mica. Now, you can put that through a magnetic separator very easily because we've got cheap power. It won't cost much to produce a mica concentrate. So I pose the question, is there a market for this? And as it appears, yes, it does. Certainly for the – it's an iron-rich phlogopite that we have rather than the biotite or muscovite. And that does have a place as a filler in the polymer market, in the plastics area. And again, coming back to our earlier comment about ESG, there has been some interest in that because it is seen as ethical mica, whereas a lot of the mica that's been produced around the world has some issues with either environmental issues or child exploitation problems. Okay. So there is some interest in that. And look, we have spoken to people about that, and there is interest in having an offtake, but we're actually still negotiating that and defining what kind of product that would be. But if we can get that as a low-cost buy credit, that changes, again, the economics of the pit. I mean, it adds a certain amount of grade gold equivalent to the design. So, yes, I don't want to speak too much about it because one of the issues I have with mica is that I don't want this project to ever be thought of as being a great project because it's got buy credit. Yeah. That's not the case at all. This thing is a great project, just standalone.
Standalone.
The micro is just a nice little add-on.
In my opening, I suggested that there's a disconnect between the apparent value of the project and the potential for near-term production and upscaling. When you compare it to what's going on in the WA gold scene, what's going to be required, you think, to overcome that discount and get it properly valued, do you think?
Yeah, look, I'm not sure entirely that a Brazilian location is best appreciated in Australia. I think there's been a few issues in the past with that. But I think over the last year or so in particular, the whole West Australian market has been in some ways overvalued. If you compare the dollar per ounce valuation of these companies compared to those on the TSX, there is a premium for being at WA without a doubt. And I think safety, ability to move around, getting equipment has been part of that, which is why so many companies have moved back to Western Australia to work. I think what will be the catalyst for us, we have demonstrated that we have some really good caliber people who like the project, who are on the register. We have the ability to do that. But when we start looking at getting and securing finance, I think that will be the first trigger. And as we then start providing more announcements going forward, say exploration, development, engineering achievements, agreements in terms of additional water, I think you're going to start seeing those will kick along. But right now we don't have a lot of news flow, and that's killing us a little bit, to be honest. If we were drilling, if we had rigs turning every day, we'd have announcements coming out every second week. But we just don't have that. We're in the engineering phase, and it's kind of like lower key, lesser demonstrable milestones. But nevertheless, they're all incredibly important. Right now on site, we're doing so much work in terms of the power line engineering, approvals, getting land for putting power lines and pipelines in, putting the dams in there, geotech. There's a lot of work being done, but it's not the sort of work that actually screams from the height, from the rooftops, buy us, increase the value.
There we go. An interesting project, an interesting part of the world, obviously. All the best to Brazil overcoming COVID. I'm sure they'll get there. Now, you do have some major re-rating points coming along, financing and obviously the eventual move, FID, to get into production and then first production. So as you go along that pathway, Andrew, all the best. We'll be watching with interest and good luck with it all.
Oh, thank you so much, Barry. Good to speak to you.
Cheers.